The following episode of Babylon Podcast has got a guest on here who's completely out of her, and then I can't begin to tell you how many times and she said that we, so we have to continue to be, because she, and that.
It was the dawn of the third age of podcasting, 12 years after the B5 premiere. The Babylon Podcast was a dream given form, its goal to discuss Babylon 5 episodes, arcs, and implications, to interview the cast and crew about their experiences and memories. It's a home away from home for fanboys, geek girls, and lurkers. It can be a silly place, but it's our last, best hope for B5 fans. This is the podcast about the story of the last of the Babylon stations. The year is 2006. The name of this show is the Babylon Podcast.
Welcome back to another Babylon Podcast. I am Summer Brooks.
I'm Tim Callender.
Hey kids, it's Jeffrey Willis. I am in North Hollywood, just blocks away from where we shot Babylon 5. Really?
What's there now?
I'm back in the hood. the facility that we built for Babylon 5 is still a studio that's being used, and I honestly don't know what... the truth is, I do know what show is in there, and I'm having a major brain fart about what what show it is.
You know what network?
Walk on over there and knock on the door.
Well, I'm not that close, but I'm in the old hood.
What can I say? Posh in the hood.
Yeah. Posh in the hood. There you go. <That's> scary.
I tell you what, it was all that bling. It was all the bling that the Babylon wore that really got the chicks going.
No, I think it was that cool glide down the sidewalk that had heads turning.
That's right. That's
one right. Bad mother. Ride. Shut your mouth. Just talking about it.
Okay, that's what we need to do is get one of the fans out there to take a picture of a really cool Escalade and put Kosh inside at the wheel, something like that, you know.
I think that ship that was in Docking Bay 13 was a lot cooler than a real Escalade.
Oh, there you go. Now you immediately went to the geek. All right, if you're into geeking, Tim, then I tell you what, you're going to absolutely love tonight's mystery guest. I have pulled another rabbit out of the hat. So, Mike, if you would, hit the button. Let's get right to the phone call.
The following episode contains some harsh language that may not be appropriate for younger viewers. So, parental discretion is advised.
Hey, hello. It's Jeffrey. Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
Hello.
I would love for you to meet Tim and Summer. Tim and Summer, welcome please to the Babylon Podcast.
Hey Tim and Summer,
Christian.
How are you?
Hi, how are you?
I'm great. How are you doing?
We are doing quite well now that we finally got you here.
Fantastic. Well, this is the first time I've been asked. I've been living in the UK, as you know, so it's been difficult for me to do podcasts, I suppose. But it was lovely to see Jeffrey the other night, and he suggested this, so I'm very happy to be here.
Well, we're extremely happy to have you as well.
Oh, thank you.
And we just to let you know, in the course of events, as it were, we of course have been reviewing every episode of Babylon 5, and we've just started season 2. And next up on the slate is Geometry of Shadows, where Ivanova really comes into her own and has to deal with a Drazi problem.
Well, that's one of my favorite episodes. I have to say, when people say, you know, I've been writing this sort of memoir, and one of the sections is most asked questions, and they say, what's your favorite episode? And I always say, the Drazi episode, because it was the first time that Joe, because I kept going up and knocking on his room saying, can I please have a sense of humor? You know, please. And this was the first episode that she really had a sense of humor. And it happened to coincide with the time that I actually broke my foot. And I called them in the middle of the night and said, look, we've got a problem. Houston, there's a problem. I've got a broken foot in 5 places. And I'm going to show up to work tomorrow, but you need to incorporate this into the next episode, because I knew that I was standing behind a desk doing the Legion stuff, the Voices of Resistance, and I was doing, not the Voices of the Resistance, I was doing the League of Nations stuff behind a desk. So I knew I could fake it for that episode, but I said, the next one, whew, we're screwed. And then he wrote this great episode with the Drazis and me breaking my leg and a whole bit, and it was great. It was like, wow, this is a really innovative writer. And I was quite, you know, nervous, but I was also comfortable once I got there, and it worked out rather well because Ivanova had a sense of humor all of a sudden, so it was great.
I'm starting now, to pick up just a hint. Wait a minute, Tim. There's a little bit of an English accent that you're not. You're changing on us right before.
Oh, no! Don't say that. Don't say that. No, you know, you're not the first person to say. It's so funny because I've been asked. I'm going to say asked instead of asked. I've been asked. Okay, you know. Okay, I'm going to try and do an American accent. No, but my voiceover agents keep calling me in for British stuff, and I'm like, why are you calling me in for only British stuff? And they're like, well, you can do it better than the Americans because you've been living there for 3 years. And I'm like, okay, but you understand I can still do American stuff. And they're like, yeah, we know that. But actually, we like you better as a Brit. It's funny. I think the more you spend time, it's so funny because my mother has such a strong German accent, and my dad's from County Cork, Ireland, so, you know, by the time I was 5 years old, I was saying, don't shut the window, and go over there, and over here, you know, and so all of my accents have been, my entire life, trying to get rid of Southern, trying to get rid of this. At the end of the day, when I'm relaxed, this is how I speak. If I want to do American, I can do American. If I want to do British, I can do British, but I have a really screwed up accent.
Right. Tally-ho now, thank you.
Right?
Bloody good, yeah.
So was there ever... So was there ever the temptation to give Ivanova a Russian accent?
Well, it's funny because a lot of people said to me when I went to Israel just last year, they said, oh, my God, your accent, your Russian accent was amazing. I'm like, first of all, baby, I don't know where you're watching the show, but I never had an accent as Ivanova. Ivanova spoke in a perfectly American English, maybe slightly educated, you know, vernacular. I mean, she had no accent. I had no accent whatsoever. But they all said to me, you know, well, you know, no, we thought that you were Russian, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, no, I had to break it to them. But I would say, after doing all that, definitely would have been sexy if I had been able to carry off a really good Russian accent. But the problem, once you get into Russia, Dushenko Maya and all the heavy things, and it's like, you know, I would have spent 4 years going, no, but Sheridan, you know, then I would have sounded like Mira, and then we, you know, it would have been, but Sheridan, no, but, no. You know, the Russian accent is fun for, like, you know, Peter had a Russian accent, Mira had a pretty much Russian accent. I mean, we all, Jakar had a pretty, like, weird accent that bordered on Eastern European. So let's just say that we all would have sounded that we were from, you know, definitely from Serbia or from Siberia or from, you know, Bucharest. Budapest, I guess, is doing really good in 2240. Yeah. So
all you would need to have was Boris Badenoff and Natasha.
Darling, no, we don't talk like this. The world is coming to end. No, last night I slept as in a log. No, it was great, like log. I slept like log. No, idiot, you slept like a log. No, I slept as in a log. No, you slept like a log. No, what is the same like as is? You know, yeah, then you get in those arguments. Yeah. Yeah. Sorry, it's lunchtime.
Hey, Claudia, the other, as you mentioned, we got together last weekend, and that was always fun. It's always great when we have a little bit of a reunion.
Pat made a beautiful party.
Well, thank you, but I want to ask you, well, Patty did all that. I didn't do shit. No, no, I cooked.
Of course you didn't do shit. She's the cooker of the woman, honey.
She
did the whole party. Walter Koenig, everybody. It was so great. And Dragon, it was beautiful. And Patty's son, just gorgeous and fabulous. And I got to meet the chickens and...
I have a question attached to that, and
okay.
That is when you see those faces that you haven't seen for so long, tell me what goes through your head.
What goes through my head is that I'm amazed that it seems like Babylon 5 is the one job I had in 25 years that I care about those people more than any other job I've ever done in my life. I mean, I've done a lot of series, and I really had a good time in Freaks and Geeks, and I really had a good time in other series. But when I meet anyone from Babylon 5, I just remember a really great 4 years of my life. And it's a tenth of my life. So when I look at that, I look at a chunk of my life that I go, I had a great time coming in there. Excuse me. And going out every night, and I'm just, 12 hours, 13 hours with these people. And I say, wow, that was a great person. This was a good time. This is a great experience. Bill Mooney and I, when we did, a couple albums together, I forgot how much I enjoy his company, And so when I run into everyone again, I just say, wow, it's special. It is not a flip. You can hear people say, oh, that was a really great time. But no, you guys had 5 great years. I had 4 great years with great people. And every day I came to work happy because I knew that I was with the best wardrobe people, the best makeup people, the best co-stars, the best, DPs, directors, everyone was just a joy to work with. And that's so rare. I mean, I can't think of any movie or film or TV movie of the week or whatever that I look back and go, oh, yeah, that was like Babylon 5. No, nothing was like Babylon 5. I used to go to Babylon 5 and go, oh, my God, I got to go work. This is fun. woohoo. I'd go to the makeup room and go, wow, it's 7 o'clock, and I don't have to put on makeup. They just put my hair in a ponytail, and now I can argue with Bruce about the O.J. Simpson trial. Woohoo! that's what we did. We just got in fights and argued, and we talked about Republican and liberal things, and then on the set, my most defining moment of Babylon 5, and I'm sure, Jeffrey, you remember this, was that when they said to us, will you sign this sexual harassment piece of paper? And the piece of paper said that you cannot look at anyone, you cannot comment on their nether regions or whatever. And all of us held hands and we looked at the producers and went, fuck you. We are so not signing this because part of the whole joy of being on Babylon 5 is the fact that I can grab, God bless him, he's dead now, but when Richard Biggs was alive, I would grab his crotch all the time, And Bill Mooney, we were perverts. And I was like, no, we are not finding this because half of the fun of our job is being completely lascivious. Bruce grabbed my boobs all the time, and they go, oh, yeah, they're real. Okay, next, And, for us to sign this thing was like, no, I'm not signing a waiver because one person fucked up. I'm sorry. We have this joy and this love. And we love each other, and we are taking the piss out of each other every 5 minutes, and I'm not going to change, and he's not going to change, and, fuck all of you. And so we didn't sign it, and the next day we all came in. I had my hand, on Richard Biggs' crotch, and he had his hand up my ass, and Bruce had his hands on my tits, and we're like, we don't like this thing that you signed up. No, you know what? This really doesn't work for us. Thanks. Anyway, and then he slapped me on the butt, and we walked back to the set, and it's like, fuck you. We'll do what we want to. You deal with your own economics and pedestrian, sort of rules and regs. But no. You were not going to find a more fun crew. I don't think they do that on Star Trek, but we did it on Babylon 5. It was fun. That was a human trailer, though. I'm not going to include the alien trailer. That was a human trailer.
So how you mentioned earlier about the music you did with Bill? How long did it take you guys to make the B5 CD with Pat?
Actually, not a very long time. It was one day that we got everyone together to sort of. I did, everyone did their singles. I think the whole day lasted about 9 hours. I mean, and then we got the whole bit. I mean, I was there for the whole thing. It really wasn't a big deal. And the three songs I did for Bill Mumy on my last album actually took about an hour, and that was it. I mean, he's just so good at what he does, and he has everything down to the wire that you literally go in and you sing, and he adds a little this, and he goes, well, do it this way, blah, 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 but 20 minutes later, you're done. And he's already got it all on tape, so it's like he's bloody amazing. I mean, he's really incredible. I mean, I've done three things with him now, and I've never seen anyone so streamlined as he is. And he's an amazing guitar player, really, and a great performer. So I love working with him. And I, he handed me a whole tape of songs and said, okay, you can use whatever you want on your album. And I was like, what? And he's like, yeah. So I picked out Beige MG, and I picked out, Atlantis, and I picked out another song. And he's like, yeah, no, just sing them. And I was so chuffed about that. I mean, he's really generous, really generous. What a great guy. Bill's great and so talented. Not to mention the fact that his kids are, doing amazing in the film industry.
We should all wish to have a quarter of the careers that his kids are having.
Oh, my God, his kids are, major stars now.
I wonder where they got that from.
Yeah. But he's a really great, mellow guy. Love Bill.
Who have you seen while you've been back?
Do you prefer just singing? Claudia, what's your preference, singing or acting?
Oh, God, I'm not a good singer, and I write okay songs. But, no, I've been an actress since the day I was born. I've never done another job other than acting. I mean, now I write, and I have a few books coming out next year. But, I've acted since I moved out of my parents' house at 15 years old, and I've been acting since then. I've never had another job, so I don't consider singing a job. I consider singing complete self-indulgence because I'm a lousy singer, but I do write pretty songs. So I consider my singing career like someone, that had the luck and the fate of having really great fans that buy the albums and go, hey, that's a good song. In a normal world, they're going, what the hell? You suck. No, I mean, compared to who's out there nowadays, I stink. But I do like making music, and I love bringing colletures or singers with own pipe players and doing all sorts of crazy stuff. And I like bringing in different aspects of it. But if you gave me my choice, of course I'd always like to act. That's my job, and it's unfortunate when you fall in love with a career that's so picky. I can do everything else creative wise, but at the end of the day, I have to say I'm an artist because I can't do your taxes. I can't add up the numbers. I can't do a lot of things, because I just don't want to. I'm not interested in it. My brother is a genetic engineer with a PhD in physics, and my other brother is a veterinarian who owns his own hospital. And one day they sat me down and they said to me, Claude, okay, so you weren't the best student, but let's face it, you can't do what we're doing, but we can't do what you're doing. And that was the sweetest thing I ever had from my brothers. It was like I helped them be able to speak to the public. I gave them Toastmaster classes in acting, because they're scared rotten, at having to approach a field of their contemporaries, whatever. But for me to think that I could have gone through 13 years of that kind of schooling, no way. I hate to disappoint the kids out there, but no way. But I must say to the kids out there, go to school. Let your parents pay for everything. Get as much education as you can. I moved out at 15 because my dad wouldn't pay for college because he was an asshole. Take advantage of your parents. Go to college. Do it. Do it. No, seriously.
No, no. How do you really feel?
No, that's how I really feel. That is how I really feel. I told you this would be an honest interview, okay?
Claudia, what was it like for you to come to Babylon 5 after the pilot had been shot? What was it like for you to come to Babylon 5 after the pilot had already been shot?
You have to understand that we didn't know that there was a pilot. I mean, you have to understand, this was like a last-minute audition. It was like, I've got 1,000 auditions a day. I'm 25 years old, or however old I was, 26 or whatever. And I didn't know there was a pilot for Babylon. Suddenly they go, you're up to the sci-fi series, blah, blah. I go in at noon, I do the reading, and they go, oh, can you come back in 3 and do the same thing? And I'm like, yeah, whatever, a bunch of douches. So I leave, and I tell my agent, I said, I must have done well, because they told me in the room to come back at 3. And she's like, do you know it's a 5-year contract? I'm like, yeah, right, like any fucking sci-fi series is going to last for 5 years. It's only freaking, bloody Paramount that's got sci-fi series at last. It's called Star Trek. Hello. This ain't going to last. Okay, fine, I'll go back. So I go back at 3 o'clock and do the same reading. They go, my agent calls me. She goes, you got the job. I went, great, yeah, okay, I got the job. Great. Well, that's going to last a day because Paramount's got the whole ruling on it. And then suddenly we started doing it. And I'm going, oh, my God. I went to the CGI house. I did all, it's like, this series is awesome. It costs half as much as any Star Trek series, and it's better. There's no models. There's no this. We've got this cool set. We've got this great DP. We've got fabulous directors, great writing. I mean, the characters are fallible. Hello. They make mistakes. It's not like, I'm going to go save the universe. No, it's no Shatner shit. It's like, wow, this is a really cool sci-fi series. And I've never been into sci-fi, and I'm like, this is a really cool series just because it's well-written. And, my brother, the geek of all time, they start watching and they're going, actually, your show's really, really well-written. And I was like, yeah, do you think so? Okay, because I don't watch TV, right? So then my mom calls me and goes, we don't get it up here in Colorado, so we have no way of watching the Claudia, I'm like, okay, Mom, but I am on TV, I swear to God. So then my dad calls me. He's living in a different universe. And he's like, well, I see, I said occasionally, but, I don't understand why, everything has to be like black and white. I'm like, black and white? The whole thing's in color. So I have, now mind you, I've never seen the show. So I'm just going on what people tell me. And one of my actor friends said, Claudia, no one will ever see it, but 10 years from now, Babylon 5, it's going to be cutting edge because the writing is that good and the CGI is that good. And I was like, oh, you're so full of shit. Guess what? 10 years later, I'm sitting at a convention and somebody hands me a disc of the DVDs because I'm writing my new book, right, for Babylon 5. So I need all the DVDs. And I watched this series and I was like, whoa, this series was really bloody good. It was awesome. I mean, I'm looking at each episode, which I've never seen before. I watched 2 episodes in 88 that I actually performed in. I only watched 2. And when I got the job to write the book, I was the first actor that was asked to write the book. And I was like, okay, I need to watch the entire series. And I was watching it going, God, Bruce was amazing. He was incredible. Oh, my God. I called him. I went, you're fucking amazing. And his whole kidnapping, I had never seen it. And I was like, fifth season, I was going, oh, my God. Things were, every season was phenomenal. Phenomenal. I mean, I don't know what to compare it to because I don't watch television, but I have to say it was a damn good show, and there were phenomenal actors on it, and I had a great time. But looking at it 10 years later, I still go, it stands up. You know, Rock.
Do you recognize that you or your character has some of the most favorite lines of
the
band?
Oh, of course, Ivanova's God, and the big speech when she died. Come on, I am Susan Ivanova, daughter.
Right.
I mean, and I'm laughing. Before your sorry ass kicks you, whatever. I mean, great line. I mean, and I never even. The one in Sleeping in Light. Never even boffed him. And that was my word because I used the word boffed for fucked, you know, in front of Joe. And so he took that from me because I said, I always said that, you know, when somebody boffed somebody, if they had sex with them. And I couldn't believe when I saw the script and it said, I never even boffed him. I was like, that was so me. That's me. That's me. That's the way I talk. He doesn't know that expression. Yeah, so it was lovely. I mean, and every time I asked, you know, Joe to change something, it was just, you know, or do something. Or he was so wonderful, and his writing was so real and natural, and every actor in that series had such a challenge. I'm extremely sorry that we couldn't do another 6 years, because I would have loved to see where all the characters went.
How long did it take before you were comfortable enough to walk up to Joe and say, can you do this with my character, please?
Actually, it didn't take long at all. I breached the sexuality concept quite after like season one, and then I breached the humor concept very quickly after that. And then he just observed me. He observed me on the set. He knew that my brother died and I wore one earring in my real life. So Ivanova wore one earring. He knew certain things of my life, and he incorporated that into the character. And I think that Ivanova was so close to me that in some way, you know, I like to think that it was Claudia, but Claudia with a different job. But, I mean, there were times that, you know, I completely understood where he was going and how to react. I really loved her. She was she's a great character. But he did actually incorporate a lot, and it didn't take a lot of effort for me to convince him to do that. He was a very, very a lovely person to work with.
Claudia, I have a question. We, there's no holes barred here on the Babylon podcast, so
uh-huh.
I want to take you back in time a little bit to a ruddy little pub in Blackpool.
Okay.
One evening, we were all there just getting ourselves stinking sloppy drunk, and all of a sudden a phone call came in, I think, from Ken Parks. Isn't that how it unfolded for us?
Mm-hmm.
To get back to the fourth, fifth season, pick up the TNT deal?
Yeah.
Can you tell me a little bit about that night for you?
Sorry?
Can you tell me a little bit about that night
for you? Well, that night was, I had already accepted a movie for USA Cable, which everyone knows. This is completely public knowledge. I accepted. We were told that we were done with season four. So my manager happened to get me a leading role on a USA Cable movie that was about flights called, what the hell was it? It was a movie of the week, but they were paying me a lot of money. It was like $100,000 for 7 days of work. And that was like a million times more than I was making on Babylon 5. And I accepted the job because I knew that Babylon 5 was over. And then they came to me and they said, no, we just got the fifth season. And I said to Joe, I said, well, what are you going to make the fifth season of? Because we've already shot the last episode. He said, well, I'll save the last episode for the end and I'll, you know, do some stuff that I want to do with the Rangers and blah, blah, blah. And I was like, well, I have this job and it's like $100,000 and I'm sorry, but I'm sorry. I moved on. You know, you guys told me the series was over. I'm sorry. everyone got all pissed off, and then I got a message saying, you're fired. Then I got another message saying, well, we will give you that time off, but we can't give you that time off in writing. And I said, well, I can't do the movie if you don't give it to me in writing, because, of course, it's a company situation. They're not going to hire me. So it ended on this really bad note of me just saying, listen, I'm willing to play Ivanova, but I can't play her from October 13th to December 2nd. That's it. That's all I'm asking. And they went, well, we can't tell that to TNT because they want you as a lead. Well, it's quite funny to me that they would be willing to hire Tracy for 8 episodes, but not hire me for 8 episodes. So the whole thing was an ego fuck and a complete ridiculous bastardation, because the fans wanted me to be there as Ivanova, and I wanted to be there as Ivanova, and I was completely willing to be there as Ivanova. I just needed 6 weeks off. And actually, in essence, when you look at the schedule, it was actually only 3 weeks off from the Babylon 5 schedule. I could have done the movie and done the Babylon 5 series easily, but they just were bastards, quite frankly. They behaved like infants. So that's, and you know what? If anyone questions the reality of it, I have it all on paper. I have my manager who will say, yeah, they fucked with us. And I will, I actually have witnesses, you know, that say, yeah, they basically, I have the piece of paper where they said, we fired you. I mean, how dare they fire me? You know, the show was done, 4 seasons. We were done. We went to do this convention. It was done. And then they send me from Warner Brothers a letter saying, by the way, you're fired. Then two days later, I get a knock on the door when I'm in England going, you need to sign here or never be in our pocket again. I'm like, oh, I would love to wear the uniform again. Just give me 4 weeks off. You know, and then they hire this chick, you know, who I love, by the way, Tracy, that they hire her to take over for 8 episodes. I'm like, I would have done 8 episodes in a heartbeat. I would have done all 22 except for, give me 10 days off. That's all I needed, you know, so I can make, you know, money. Thank you, because you're paying Bruce $45,000 a week and you're paying me, what, $5,000? Yeah, thanks. So, yeah, I was actually having the opportunity to make some nice money, and they basically fired me. So that's my story, and I'm sticking to it. And it is the true story.
That's good. Oh, thank you for sharing that. I knew that was, you know, I mean, I wasn't privy to the conversations, but I was there watching it. Yeah, and it was obviously not pretty.
That's the honest truth. Listen, if I had any reason to lie, like, listen, if I would have gone into rehab or if I got pregnant, I would have said something. But no, it was that fucking petty. It was down to the point where it was like, okay, I just took another job, but yeah, I'm happy to. And they went, no, we want you on October 19th. And I'm like, I can't do it on October 19th because I'm going to make $100,000 to work for 7 days. If you made $100,000 for 7 days, I'll take my clothes off and I'll fuck the guy for $100,000 for 7 days. Give me a break. I mean, come on, man. I mean, honestly, give me a break. You know, I mean, I love the series, I love it, but I'm like, okay, I got a choice here. I can go back and make like $2 a day, or I can ask them to excuse this whole thing. And they just wouldn't accept it. Mm. So that's the reality of the reason why I left Babylon 5. And if anyone tells you anything different, they're full of shit, because I'm telling you.
Now, I'm sure you're aware of the Lost Tales that's beginning production in Vancouver. The Babylon 5 Lost Tales that JMS, it's going to be direct-to-DVD episodes.
Oh, the new little vignettes that he asked only Peter to get involved with, yeah. I heard about that. No, apparently he asked nobody. What?
Well, no, there are comments out there by him saying anything's possible regarding a new Ivanova story. So we were curious if you'd heard anything, but I'm guessing by your answer.
Listen, I've never said a bad word about that man. He created a beautiful character for me. He just, in the end, he he fucked me blind because I didn't see this coming, and I was with a manager that was like, you know, well, you've done your job contractually, and they should be happy to have you for 18 episodes instead of 22, and I thought that would be fair. But then they didn't want me at all, and I was really hurt. I was like, wow, the fans are going to be pissed off. They want me. They don't want somebody else. And I was actually quite insulted that they thought they could replace me. And I was like, no, you can't replace that because not because of me. I don't think I'm that special, but I think I'm good. But it's because the character he created that I fell into and grew into was very special. And Ivanova is extremely special. There would not be a reason why. I mean, I couldn't believe that he thought that he could get some chick in there to, you know, to as much as I love Tracy, but it's like, how can you replace Ivanova? Ivanova's gone. I mean, she was a great character. And that's what upset me, was I was like, it wasn't about me. It wasn't about, I mean, God knows, I wasn't making any money off Babylon 5, so it certainly wasn't about the money. Certainly wasn't about the job. It was just about, hey, the fans are going to be really pissed off, you know? And every time I go out anywhere, it's all about, why weren't you in the fifth season? Mm-hmm. I was like, well, look at the fifth season. It wasn't that good. But sometimes you have to, I mean, he created some pretty amazing characters. And you know, I'm very proud to have been part of that. I think it's one of the best sci-fi series ever to have been produced.
So do we.
Yeah, no, I mean, there's a reason why people keep coming back. I mean, when I watched it because I was writing the book and I read all of Joe's short stories, I realized what a genius he is and how it all fits into everything, future, current times, everything, and how everyone's fallible and human, and absolutely just, it's such a great take. He's so talented. I'm really proud to have been part of it, and I will never stop being part of it. Had I been in the fifth series, I don't know if it would have been that good, you know? I don't know. I mean, I think I left at the right time for me. But if they ever did another one, yeah, I'd like to be part of it.
from my point of view, for what it's worth, I mean, obviously we all missed seeing Ivanova in the fifth year. But there was also something, for me personally, it worked in that the tragedy that Ivanova had faced with the loss of Marcus and everything else that had happened, to have her absent for that period of time, and then to see her one last time for Sleeping in Light.
Yes.
You know, there was kind of the sense of that, even though the characters had kind of gone their way over 20 years,
that's what we shot.
Yeah.
Yeah, and do you know that the first episode I actually got to hang out with Mira, and I was like, Mira, you and I have never done a scene together, and we were like, yeah, we've never, and it's like with Peter, I never did scenes with any of the aliens, any of them. And so, I mean, for me to have an actual girl scene besides the one, you know, with Mira that I did years and years ago about, you know, female stuff. But I mean, this was like really cool. But I have to say, the amazing thing about, you know, the whole shooting the last episodes and everything is that we really did think that it was over. You know, it was gone. And we were going to be happy that we had this experience and we loved each other and we were all extremely proud of our work, and it was gone. It was done. We shot the last episode and we had a goodbye party. And you have to understand, as fans, nobody understands it. We said goodbye, and then months and months later, somebody said, oh, we got some money for the fifth season. So you have to understand that your life goes on, you know, and you go, wait a minute. Yeah, I'd love to go back there, but I've just made a commitment, blah, blah, blah. You know, so it's not that, you know, any of us fell out of love with it. It was just a matter of their inability to make it, you know, a consensus and make it a steadily available job.
Well, here's my last question for the night. If at any point do you think in the development of Ivanova, at any time did Ivanova really think about fucking Kosh?
It's funny. I think Kosh was more of a male, like a father figure. And I think that Ivanova fancied Jakar for sure. And I know that, Jakar was, as far as sexuality, her choice. Kosh was more like the, I don't know what you would say, the Luke's father and you know, Star Wars. I mean, it's more of a no. Nothing sexual.
Are you thinking that maybe
Tommen's character actually must have gotten off with whoever was in Kosh's body? But no, Ivanova, no. I know Ivanova was definitely interested in Jakar, in my mind, and in Talia, yeah. And as far as other boys are concerned, nothing, because, you know, they put me in this sort of mask and gave Bruce, you know, a couple ex-wives, and what would I have done with Jerry Doyle? I mean, I loved the fact that she was just, you know, after the first season, I was like, please don't give me any boyfriends. It's annoying. It's annoying. How can you be the best pilot and fuck your way through the universe? Come on. And he kind of went, okay, you're right. So, no, I liked her being sort of ambiguous. And I love the fact that girls go, but were you, and boys go, but were you? And I'm like, yeah, I was both. I was both. One of us both. She just wanted somebody that had separate bedrooms.
It actually dawns on me that you had your few interactions with aliens were some of the most fall down funny ones of the series. The one with the Drazi and the how shall I put it? The mating dance with the Lumani. How much of that little dance routine was improvised or?
Actually, he wrote the dialogue, and I had to improvise the movements.
Really?
Really annoying, yeah.
It was fall down funny, though.
It wasn't very cool. Hey, Jeffrey, are you there?
Yes, ma'am. Absolutely. I'm a little heartbroken, actually. I was thinking
why?
That Ivanova at least wanted to peek under the shower curtain.
Oh, sweetie. God, don't get upset. Oh man, now he's gonna get all bummed. I have an 8 o'clock for my book that's coming out, the Babylon 5.
Oh
book.
Yeah,
is that out yet?
No, I'm gonna go through it at 8 o'clock. That gives me an hour to sort of edit for a while. So I need to get off the phone.
Yeah, thank you so much for doing this.
Yeah, no, it was lovely to talk to you guys.
Good luck with everything, yeah. and let us know when you're back here.
I'm back in January, February, and March, and April.
Yeah,
fan.
Okay.
Then we'll do it again.
Lovely to talk to you guys.
Well, thanks for
all
your time, Claudia. We had a great time.
We're back with another exciting installment of Interview with a Zombie. My guest today is the zombie formerly known as Bob. Bob, before the break, you were telling us about your love for the Sci-Fi Podcast Network, tsfpn.com. Why, yes, Bob, it certainly does have something for everyone. Well, of course you're a busy zombie. I mean, who isn't these days? That's why you're glad TSFPN has collected the best in podcasting all in one convenient place.
Brains.
Not until after you finished your interview. Well, there you have it, folks. Straight from the zombie's mouth, tsfpn.com, the place for out-of-this-world entertainment.
Well, that was another fun, entertaining interview.
Absolutely.
Do you feel in some way that by bringing Ivanova to the show like this, that I somehow, you're not going to accuse me of getting you guys like a Russian bride or something off the internet, right?
It's the Russian bride everyone wants.
Yes.
She's a crack-up, man.
Oh, yeah.
And so we do want to apologize to every mother who is there listening to the show tonight with their youngster and is now offended. Please send all your emails to...
You can send all your emails to Jeffrey Willarth at... no, that was fantastic. And
that
she was.
Was
very, very forthcoming and very honest, and that was just wonderful to hear. Not that everybody's been not honest, but, because that whole situation with her departure has always been, a topic of great debate. And to get her, and she didn't shy away from it. I thought that was really commendable.
No, I think that's the beauty of the podcast is we seem to get everybody to pretty much just open up, pretty quickly here.
Yeah.
Oh, I really, I missed the opportunity, though? I would have loved to have asked Claudia about Snack Man.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Well,
I'm sure
to just make
Claudia
that
had some, I'm sure Claudia would have had some great stories to talk about Snack Man.
Well, if and when we get her back on, we'll have to make that top priority to ask about that.
Absolutely. Did we get any viewer mail?
We have voicemails.
No viewer mail because nobody's looking. But
we have voicemails. Do we have any emails to read too, or just the voicemails?
I've got a couple emails, but let's handle the voicemails first.
This is Jarsto from the Netherlands, and these days of the Dutch Nail podcast. Yes, you people infected me. I blame you for all of this since you were my first ever podcast. Now, first of all, I'd like to comment on something from episode... Well, it should be 38. It's not actually out yet, but anyway, it's the October 11th livestream. Tim, you notice that I don't say goodbye at the end of these messages. The reason for that is, I would think, obvious. You people ask for short voicemails, and signing off properly on one of these easily takes up a couple of seconds. I'd rather spend those on content. And as you pointed out during the episode discussion, only the bad guys ever sign off politely. I really rather wouldn't fit into that category, so I don't. Now moving back to episode 37, I'd like to thank Mike for saying I could send in stuff anytime I want. And I'd like to add my voice to those saying it would be a good idea to do a regular listener feedback show every 4 or 5 weeks. This is Jarsto from the Netherlands signing off. Fear my evil.
Okay, this is my man here. He can call any of the Farpoint Media shows anytime. I'll put him to the top.
What a hoot. That was great, Tim. Put in your pay. You have been spanked again.
Well, when you stick it out there, somebody's going to slap it. That's all I can say.
Wow. When you're hungry, you're hungry.
Yep. I think it's a feeding frenzy at my expense here recently.
Well, you did ask for it that time.
Oh, that's all right.
Yeah, you did. You opened the door and said, hey, come on in here, and never mind.
All right. Anybody else?
There's no such thing as bad attention. That's all I can say.
Okay. Next one.
Hi, Tim, Summer, and Jeffrey. Listened to your podcast from its beginning, and it's the first time I felt that I had something to contribute. After listening to your latest episode, I thought how ironic that both actors who played the chief physicians on Babylon 5 died. As a former registered nurse, it made me stop and think of how fragile our lives are, how fleeting they are, despite our best efforts to preserve them. And since Johnny Secco was a Shakespearean actor, he probably would appreciate Shakespeare's own words from the play Cymbeline that came to my mind while I was listening to that. And that is, by medicine, life may be prolonged, yet death will seize the doctor too. Aloha. This is Dan from Honolulu.
Wow. Yeah. Aloha to you. That was awesome. Yeah. Man, we're getting great calls tonight.
Yeah. Yeah, we have despite the three of us, I think we have a pretty good intelligent base of listeners that.
No, we'd get one more. We'd be balanced.
I think we need more poetry coming from the fans. I think.
Careful what you ask.
Wow.
You want a B5 poetry slam?
No. I want. Hey, I'm sure someone out there has already done a comparative study between applicable Shakespeare quotes and Babylon 5. I'm just asking for more contributions.
There you go.
Wow.
You know what? Send them in. I'll produce them up.
Yep.
Oh, sure. He says that now.
Yeah. He's just looking for something else to complain about.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. I'm actually going to use them on other shows, so.
Oh, gotcha.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Next one.
Hey, Tim, Summer, and Jeffrey. This is Trinitas Whiteman from The Signal. I just finished listening to episode number 34. I'm catching up, and I have to agree that the addition of Bruce Boxleitner as Captain John Sheridan really turned the show around. Don't get me wrong, I like Sinclair, but I think the difference is that Sheridan is a man of action, while Sinclair is the diplomat. Plus, I think that Sheridan is generally more likable. I feel that viewers are drawn more to the men of action rather than the diplomat. Action gets our minds more active and has you hanging on the edge of your seat. It's like captains like James C. Kirk and Malcolm Reynolds are so appealing. We can exclude Picard from this typical dull diplomat since he has that sexy voice. As for the Babylon 5 Firefly comparison, honestly, I love them both, so I couldn't place one over another. They both have excellent writing, though the stories are told in their own unique ways. Babylon 5, luckily, had time to grow, while Firefly didn't. What was constant between them, though, was that I was hooked and couldn't wait to see the next episode. That's all for me. Stay shiny, and I'll see you in the verse.
Very nice.
And yeah.
You know, after listening to and talking with Claudia and some of the things she said about Bruce, I think he was a man of action in more than one way.
Okay. But, you know, his point is well taken that Sinclair... I always described him as being an executive, and Sheridan was a cowboy. And that is how I would describe both of those actors in their real lives. And while a place like Babylon 5 could certainly benefit from the leadership of an executive, it certainly can also benefit from the leadership of a cowboy. So they both really did work. They were just two totally diametrically opposed methods of getting it done.
Mm-hmm. I think that the situations that the universe found itself in going ahead from season 2 to season 3, it benefited more from having the cowboy at the reins.
Well, it sure made for better TV.
Well, it also makes you wonder, if you think of Sinclair as the executive, how that approach would have brought the and LaShock together as we see it come together through the course of Babylon 5 in order to face that greater threat of the shadows. You know, maybe they needed someone back there who knew how to handle things from a quieter place. Because really, you're looking at Rangers, not only were they human and Minbari, but we also know there were at least Drazi Rangers, and I would guess other races mixed in there as well. So you need somebody who has the diplomatic ability to get all those disparate peoples together and working as one unit.
Sounds good to me.
Okay.
Yep. Is there more?
Yeah, no more voicemails, but I think we have time for one email.
Sure.
Okay.
Short one.
A quick one.
Short one. Actually, I have a short one here. This is from Steve from Singapore. He says, well, to add my two cents worth to the discussion of the Babylon 5 holy priest and his effort to turn the undead, how about the ritual ranger bucket consecrated to the Vorlon god Buji?
What?
Okay, it was short, but it actually was missing some more elements.
you remember the episode where Ivanova and Marcus go looking for the first ones,
mm-hmm,
Sigma 957, and they're trying to figure out how to get their attention, And Marcus says, let me get a bucket and put it on my head and pretend to be the great boiling god Bougie. And that's what he's saying. Yeah.
Do we actually have any accurate carvings of what the Vorlon god Bougie looks like?
I'll get a bucket.
That was the funniest episode. That really was.
We'll have to have Claudia back on because I really wanted to ask her about working with Jason Carter. Because that was amazing chemistry between the two of them as well.
And I would like to know if they pulled any pranks on each other. Oh, well.
Once again, she was saying a lot of stuff was pulled, but not necessarily pranks.
Yeah. It wasn't pranks. It was more like survival tactics. Summer, do we have time for one more? Or?
Is Mike's knocking stuff over here? Yeah, we have time for one more.
Okay. Last one.
Here we go. This is from Matt in Michigan, and he brings up some interesting ideas for the Lost Tales. Lots of people mentioned Sheridan, Marcus, Gideon, and a host of others. In addition, I'd be interested in seeing these. A Bester show, Sinclair as Valen, and Galen from Crusade. Hmm. I'm also really curious about what happened to David McIntyre, Arthur, after a late delivery from Avalon and how he fared with the Narn. And some more general ideas. I'd be curious to see something focused on Centauri telepaths, as well as something about Drazi Rangers.
Actually, the what was her name? The young telepath that went to live on Minbar. That might be an interesting story,
that
too.
That would be a good one, too. And I can't remember the character's name now to save my life, but in The Quality of Mercy.
Yes.
Right.
Interesting.
You know, mostly what Matt's doing here is he's driving home the point we've mentioned time and again, is that there was just so much depth to Joe's writing, so much in the storyline, that you could probably build an entire network, you know, just on it. Could be Babylon TV.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know, all the stuff. Yeah, exactly, because there are so many great stories that could be expanded on and move on, and characters that we would love and follow and all that sort of stuff, and they wouldn't even have to intertwine because they already did. That's how we got to know the characters in the first place. But
The other thing that's important is the fact that JMS had written out at least a general outline of history for the universe that covered a million years. So as opposed to other series that deal on an episodic basis and don't really, you know, the episodes don't necessarily follow any greater plan, these will, you know, and they will make sense in a grander scheme of things. So, yeah, good ideas.
Mm-hmm.
Awesome. Well, that was a damn good show.
It was.
Yeah, that was. Thank you once again, Jeffrey, for lining up such fabulous guests.
Don't thank me, guys. We're all in the same family.
Well, if you
all
want
pull our weight.
If you want to contribute to our little family here, we have forums. Those are located at cultofsummer.com/Babylon. If you want to send Tim an email or us an email, it's at babylonpodcast@gmail.com. If
you have complaints, send it to Battlestar Galactica. Because we're not home.
If you have your own voicemail to submit, you can record it yourself and email it to babylonpodcast@gmail.com or call our hotline, 206-338-2259. That's 206-338-2259.
The year the Great War came upon us all.
And we'll see you next time on the other side of the gate.